This is Encounter on VOA. Here's Carol Castillo.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Encounter on the Voice of America. I'm VOA national correspondent Jim Malone, sitting in this week for Carol Castiel. Well, on today's program, we're going to be talking about the U.S. political landscape in the wake of Tuesday's midterm congressional elections. Opposition Democrats retake control of the House of Representatives, while Republicans had a slight expansion of their majority in the U.S. Senate. We're going to be tackling questions such as, is the balance of power now shifting in Washington? If so, how? Who benefits and who loses out? We're going to be talking about a lot of these issues, and we are very pleased to have a couple of guests join us today. Our usual political gurus, I would describe them. Joining me to discuss the post-election political landscape in Washington, John Fortier, director of the Democracy Project at the Bipartisan Policy Center here in Washington, and Jim Kessler, senior vice president for policy at Third Way, a center-left policy group here in the nation's capital. Welcome to both of you. It's great to have you here. And there's a lot to talk about, really, I think, in the wake of what we saw on Tuesday. And John, let me start with you. I want to get both of your assessments in terms of the overall political landscape now that we see the election returns.
Well, I think the election went somewhat as expected. Democrats did very well. The out party does well in midterm elections, and Democrats have gained the House of Representatives, have gained a number of seats, perhaps even a little bit more than people would have thought. That win came especially in the suburbs of cities all around the country, in places where there were more educated voters, some of people who are supportive of Democrats, and perhaps some people who are Republicans defecting to the Democratic Party. So it was a good day for them in the House, in the governorships, in the state legislative races. The one place that Republicans did well, and we expect them to do reasonably well, is the Senate, where they are going to expand their majority. We still have a couple of races out there to determine, but they will see a much clearer majority in the Senate. And that has to do in part with the fact that they were able to win in conservative places, conservative states that had Democrats sitting in those seats and doing well in states like Florida and Arizona as well.
So a little bit of a split verdict in one sense in terms of how the results for the House and the Senate played out.
I think so. I think it was realigning along the lines that we've been seeing all together. So Democrats doing well. Overall, the wind was in the Democratic direction, and that played out in the suburban educated places. But Republicans still consolidating some gains in some places that they've been moving in, the more red, rural, less college-educated states.
Well, Jim Kessler, one of the takes I had after the results was, in some ways, to me, you know, we refer to red states for Republican states, blue states for Democrat states. In some ways, America, on Tuesday night, it seemed as though the red states got a little redder, the blue states got a little bluer.
Yeah, and I think you saw that in the Senate races. So the question was there going to be a blue wave in this election? And I think the answer is there was a blue wave, but not a blue tsunami. And if you look at the House of Representatives, it was a fantastic night for Democrats. You look at the governor's races, too. Democrats did very, very well. They flipped 7 governor's seats. That's a lot. They flipped some state legislatures. They picked up 350 state House seats. They won a bunch of attorney general races. There was a couple of disappointments. Florida was a disappointment for Democrats, for sure. They thought they were going to win the governor's race, and they thought they were going to win that Senate race. It's still possible. There's votes outstanding in Florida. It's still possible they may win that Senate race. Georgia was another place where Democrats thought that they had a chance to win a governor's race there. So there was some places where the wave could have been a little bit bigger for Democrats. But yeah, you're seeing the continued sorting in this country, the political sorting, where those red states, they got pretty red, and the blue states, they got pretty blue. And then the purple states, they started hewing towards a blue direction.
And that, I think, could be critical, and we'll talk about this later on for our politics going forward, especially if we start talking about the 2020 presidential election, because that election was close, and if the president wants to repeat in 2020, there may be some tea leaves to read here about the results so far. But let me ask you about Democrats in the House. What was the key to them doing well in the House races?
Well, this is what really mattered for Democrats. I think it was two things. One is a lot of Democrats were running in congressional districts that previously had been, you know, Republican strongholds, but because of the realignment, a lot of college-educated voters, they had started moving more towards a Democratic direction. So they had some terrain advantage on their hand. But this is the other thing, and this was critical. Democrats in nearly all of those seats nominated a moderate to run in that race. They didn't nominate far-left populists or democratic socialists or super progressive candidates. They did in a couple of those places, and they all lost. So there is a moderate Democratic group. They're called the House New Democrats. Okay, they represent the moderates Democrats in the caucus. 25 of the races that were flipped were the races that their candidate had won the primary. So the right candidates, the right terrain, the right political environment all came together.
Well, John, let me ask you about the Senate results, because picking up on what Jim was saying about moderate Democrats running, I mean, some of the Senate Democrats definitely were moderates. Some of them actually agreed with President Trump on certain issues, like in Missouri, Claire McCaskill talking about the threat of the caravan and immigration issues. And yet in Missouri, in Indiana, in North Dakota, we saw Democratic incumbents go down to defeat.
Well, I think you've seen in those states, some of them have been quite Republican for a while, and some of them have really moved in the Republican direction at a statewide level. So if Donald Trump is losing support and the Republicans broadly losing support among educated white voters, they're gaining support in the Rust Belt. And places like Indiana and Missouri are really quite Republican these days and hard for any Democrat to hold. If the election had gone the other way and Hillary Clinton had been sitting in the presidency, I think you would have seen Republicans win many more seats in the Senate. So I think Democrats in those seats did benefit from a Democratic wave. It just wasn't enough to overcome the look in those states. Let me respond a little bit to Jim's point, because I broadly agree with him about the Democrats that were running in suburban districts. They were not the most progressive. But I think we do want to distinguish how our politics has changed. If you went back to 2006, where Democrats did very well, or even further back, you know, Democrats were still the party that won in some very conservative places. They won in the South. They won in some rural districts. Democrats today didn't do that. What they did was they put moderate liberal candidates. The average Democrat is liberal, as the average Republican is conservative. And they won in places that Hillary Clinton had won and that Donald Trump had won by a little bit. They didn't win in overwhelmingly conservative places like they used to. So our politics really has aligned along the lines that we saw in the last two elections.
Well, that gets me to the question of, particularly if you look at the Senate results, the president is clearly taking credit for some of these Republican victories. And Jim Kessler, I want to ask you, I mean, in one sense, the president was a central issue on the ballot, and it seems to have played out differently in the races for the House versus the races for the Senate.
Absolutely. Donald Trump cost Republicans the House. Donald Trump kept the Senate Republican. And this election showed that he still has power. He is still a president that has political standing with his base. He pulled some candidates over the line. If Florida, if it ends up that race turns out that the Republicans win that race, and Arizona, you have to give the credit to Donald Trump there. At the same time, in a lot of the suburban areas of the country, he has turned off voters so much with his behavior, his tweets, his attitude, the failed racism that he espouses that is just against people's moral fiber. The House turned because people just felt like we have to have a check on Donald Trump. So for him, it's a split decision. I think as time goes on, this will look like a bad outcome for Donald Trump, not actually a split decision.
John, let me ask you about that. I mean, we saw a news conference shortly after the election results came in by the president, obviously very defiant, as he often is, and didn't really want to spend much time talking about what happened in the House of Representatives, but certainly took a lot of credit for the results in the Senate races where Republicans did well.
I think Jim is broadly right on this, that the president was very active in these elections. In fact, if we go back and think about what expectations were for this president coming into his presidency, I think many people, even Republicans, thought he would be kind of an independent force who would do his own thing and wouldn't really be as connected to other party members. He's fully in the party. He's trying to change the party in his direction. But he went and put himself out of the line, and it mattered, I think, in the red states. It mattered in places like Florida. He almost pulled people over the line, I think, in places like Montana and West Virginia, where there were popular incumbents. He almost caused the Republicans to win there. So I do think he was effective, but he went to the places where he was popular. Now, that's not uncommon. Presidents do that. Presidents are not effective everywhere. But I do think it's somewhat supercharged, as Jim said, that he's got a place in some of these red states, although some of them, like Florida, you know, are swing states that have a strong red base, but also did not really help them in the margins in the suburbs.
Following up on that, John, did his emphasis on immigration in the last few weeks make a difference, do you think, in some of these races? Talk of the caravan, sending troops to the border. There were Republicans, like the outgoing House Speaker Paul Ryan, urging him to focus on the economy, which was a strong underlay of success for the administration.
It's not as if the president has backed down from his signature issue, which he ran on in the primaries, ran on in the general election. I think the biggest issue on the ticket essentially was Donald Trump, pro or con. But after that, Democrats talked a lot about health care. Republicans cared a lot about immigration, and it mattered and helped him in certain places. But again, I think this is one of these issues where it helped him in red states and pulling some people across the line, but also pushed a little further away the more educated suburban Republicans and Democrats who were not with him.
I want to talk more about that with Jim in a second. But first, I want to remind you all that you are listening to Encounter on the Voice of America. Our guests today are John Fortier of the Bipartisan Policy Center and Jim Kessler from Third Way, both here in Washington. We're talking about the results of the U.S. midterm elections, the first time Americans have gotten to weigh in on the Trump presidency 2 years into Mr. Trump's first term, if it is more than one term. You can find out more about Encounter. Our podcast is available for free download on iTunes. You can find the download by clicking on the iTunes tab on our website at voanews.com/encounter. You may also follow us on Twitter at Carol Castiel, VOA. Carol's our regular host, of course, or connect with us on Facebook. Now, here's a shout out to one of our loyal listeners. This is David Daudu from Mina, Nigeria. Thanks very much for checking in with us, and we appreciate your support as always. If you want to hear your name on the air, please send an email to encounter@voanews.com or like us and leave a comment on our Facebook page. Well, back to the discussion, and we were talking about immigration as an issue, Jim Kessler, and I was curious, do you think Democrats had an effective response to this focus on immigration, the caravan, and all this stuff? Because it seemed like it might have tilted some of those red state Senate races at the end.
I think their effective response was to move the subject to health care, which was a stronger terrain for them. It is really unfortunate that immigration has become such a polarizing issue in the United States, as it's become polarizing in a lot of the Western democracies. Donald Trump, he has a strategy. His strategy is to motivate people by fear, and he feels that a divided country benefits him personally and politically. So we have a president of the United States who uses fear as a weapon and uses division as a political strategy. I think he deployed it with mixed success. I think it helped him a little bit in the Senate, hurt in the House, hurt in a lot of governor's races. But that's the unfortunate nature of the politics in this country and this president. His leading weapons of choice, very unfortunate.
We have seen in the past presidents take lessons from midterm defeats. And let's face it, the history of the midterm results is often not good for the president's party. I think there's only three times since 1900 that the president's party has actually gained seats in a midterm, at least House seats. But I wonder, is the president, do you sense he is interested in taking any lessons for this? Or the other view might be that he saw his tough rhetoric and the focus on the issues at the end is actually helping and therefore a formula for success. Jim?
So I don't think he's a lesson taker. With that being said, here are some of the lessons that I think he ought to take, or some of the places where he should be a little bit scared. And that is, Democrats did extraordinarily well in these elections in the three states that essentially he flipped in 2016 to take the presidency from Hillary Clinton. And that was Pennsylvania, Michigan, and Wisconsin. So Democrats won all three governor's races there. Very important. They picked up a large number of congressional seats there. In other places in the Midwest, Democrats did very well, like Minnesota. Also in New Hampshire, another swing state, Democrats picked up a congressional seat there. So in the places where he broke the Democrats' back in 2016, Democrats had a big resurgence both at the state level and the federal level. And I think he ought to be worried about that.
John, what about yourself? I mean, the idea of the president, how is he likely to read the election results, and particularly when he internalizes it, which he does with everything, you know, already got an indication with his post-election news conference. But what's your sense of the possibility of taking some lessons from what happened?
Well, first, on an outside lesson, I think we often think these midterm elections are determinative of the next election, and we've seen that they're not. Of course, Ronald Reagan, Bill Clinton, or Barack Obama suffered some significant losses in their midterm and went on to win some of them, you know, pretty significant wins. It doesn't mean that Donald Trump is going to turn it around. It just means that this election is 2 years away and the conditions could be very different. On what to take from this, presidents have taken different lessons. Bill Clinton, I think, came out of a big loss and had some humility and said, I'm going to change and I'm going to work with Congress more. While doing so, I think he also let the Newt Gingrich-led Congress kind of overplay its hand and came back in a way. Barack Obama, I think, was much more willing to say, look, I was selected president and this is something against me, but I'm not changing course too much. I certainly think Donald Trump will be more like that. He did send some signals in the press conference. Of course, the press conference was in many ways contentious. Maybe that wasn't intentional, but it just comes out that way for Donald Trump sometimes. But he also did have some messages that he was going to work with Nancy Pelosi, that, you know, there's a side to him that's transactional. I don't want to read too much into this, but there is a way in which there may be some issues as a deal maker that the two sides can work together. They'll be smaller or fewer, but it is possible that there's a side to Donald Trump that will say, hey, there are a few things we can do with this Democratic majority in the House that will be practical.
Well, that does get to the issue of what comes now. How is governing going to be affected by the change, the makeup in Congress? Democrats controlling the House, they have a major seat at the table. And as John indicated, possibility there, perhaps, if they want to work on some things together. Although it seems our election cycles speed up more every time. And we're already talking about Trump's reelection bid in 2020. Jim Kessler, I want to also ask about the other added feature of Democratic control of the House is their ability now to do oversight and investigate the administration. And it looks like the president is already sending some warning shots about that.
Right. So the Democrats, they now have the power to control the committees. They have oversight committees that are meant to investigate whatever administration is in power. They are going to use it. I think they will use it aggressively. The question will be, will voters think they're using it too aggressively or at the appropriate level? There'll be some folks on the Democratic side who think that no matter how aggressive you go, it's not aggressive enough. So there's going to be a balancing act that they will need to have there to be both effective politically and effective with the population out there. Donald Trump says that he doesn't want to cooperate. They don't have that much choice in the matters. It's not that easy to just say, we're not going to show up when you're called to testify. It's happened before. It's been done rarely. But Donald Trump has broken a lot of rules in the past, and so has his administration. The issue is, though, there is a lot of corruption in this administration. There was in the Interior Department. There was at EPA. People have had to leave. So there are legitimate reasons to look at this.
Is there a risk, John Fortier, for Democrats focusing too much on trying to hold Trump in check now that they have the majority in the House and not being seen to be doing something with the majority on issues like health care, which was such an important issue in the election?
I do think there's a possibility of overreaching. I mentioned Newt Gingrich and Republicans in 1994 coming in with great optimism and in some ways right after the election being seen as the primary moving force. And ultimately, I think using that power in a way that people reacted against. But I do think that Democrats on the legislative side, realistically, on their big priorities, this is an opportunity for them to put forward some alternatives, which probably aren't going to get done in the healthcare arena. But there are some issues like infrastructure, perhaps drug pricing, some smaller things that maybe some deals would be cut. And they're going to have to work together on getting budget appropriations done every year. That's always contentious. It will be more contentious, and it will mean some of their priorities find their way in. So there'll be something working together. The other thing I'll note is the Senate, which is more Republican. I don't think the oversight will change so much, but the bigger majority will be more comfortable for Republicans to appoint or confirm judges or administration officials. That's not to say that Republicans will all be a rubber stamp for any nomination, but it is certainly an easier task to get some of these people through when you're not talking about a 1 or 2 vote margin. You're talking about a 4 or 5 vote margin.
Well, speaking of possible confirmations and changes in the administration, we've seen Jeff Sessions asked to resign by President Trump shortly after the midterms, Jim Kessler. And that has certainly a lot of Democrats concerned about the fate of the Russia probe being led by Special Counsel Robert Mueller.
The next few days are going to be very, very interesting. So the firing of Jeff Sessions, this is the opening chess move to declaw the Mueller investigation. But Mueller had to have been anticipating this. So by the time this show airs, we might see a whole bunch of indictments coming out. Like, I really expect that Mueller has been waiting until after the elections, has been very aggressive but very quiet, and very close to, if not even hours away, from the time where the next set of indictments will come to make it feel like it's impossible to try and stop this now. It's gotten too big, the targets are too large, and the indictments are too serious.
Do you think the president was somehow emboldened by their success in the Senate to make this move?
I think they've been planning this for a long time. They might have felt emboldened by what happened in the Senate, but just realized that most of the plays on the chessboard are going to incur before the next group of senators even sit down. So this was a desperation move, I think, by the president. Jeff Sessions, except for the Mueller probe, has been the perfect attorney general for Donald Trump, carrying out an agenda that is very, very conservative, especially on immigration issues. So, look, this is one of the big threats to the Trump presidency. They've gotten close to him with some of the indictments, like the Manafort indictment. The next 48 hours are going to be interesting.
The next thing I wanted to touch on before we close out the program is what all this means for the 2020 presidential election. John, from your vantage point, how does it help the president or hurt the president and the two parties as you look ahead to 2020?
Well, in a simple way, I think it has no effect on the 2020 election. Again, these are separate elections. Conditions can change. Certainly, Donald Trump actually benefited, even though it didn't do so well in some ways, from having a good economy. If the economy's worse in 2020, much harder for him. You know, I think the big question really going forward is what will happen with the economy, but also what will happen on the Democratic side. A midterm election is a referendum on the president. You can look at this person on the other side of the aisle and say, I don't like them. All sorts of Democrats of different stripes can agree on that. But it gets more complicated when you have to pick a candidate. And that candidate will have some flaws, will have some leaning towards one part of the party or the other. And it will be a big race, as it was on the Republican side in 2016. You'll see a lot of people on the debate stage. And how it will shake out will really matter to Democrats. So I don't think this election matters directly. Democrats, I think, are enthusiastic. They'll probably be somewhat enthusiastic going forward. But that primary season that we'll see in the spring of 2020 is really the next variable that we'll see will determine the election.
Well, Jim Kessler, you mentioned how Democratic success in some of the upper Midwest, this was an area that Trump took back from the Democrats. It was a key to his election victory, which was a narrow one in terms of the Electoral College. Even though it looked bigger, the actual numbers of votes in three states that put him over the top is pretty
tiny,
small.
Tiny.
So in one sense, you'd have to think there's some concern there given the election results, but also maybe the Democrats' path is a little narrower because of what we see in the red states, the Republican states, where it seems hard for Democrats to penetrate there.
This is what I think is the most significant thing that happened in the midterm elections for Democrats. And that is Tuesday night, election night, was actually a very bad night for the Sanders wing of the Democratic Party. The moderates swept in all of these swing districts. Moderate governors did very well and flipped a whole bunch of seats in the Midwest. Bernie has an organization out there, Our Revolution, that endorsed a whole series of candidates. They didn't flip a single seat in 2018. They went 0-4 whatever. So there was this view over the last 2 years that is this moderate wing of the Democratic Party dead? Well, what happened is they did very well in the primaries throughout 2018, beginning with the governor's primary in Virginia, the sort of the bellwether in 2017, where a moderate beat a more progressive. It carried all the way through to Election Day. So there is a path for Democrats to beat Donald Trump. And moderate voters turned out, not just progressive voters, in primaries and generals, to vote for Democrats. And that could really change the Democratic Party and take the White House back from Donald Trump.
Well, on that note, now that we've leapt ahead to 2020, we've already kicked off the next campaign cycle, but I want to thank our guests today for at least dissecting what we saw on the 2018 midterm cycle. Jim Kessler from Third Way, John Fortier from the Bipartisan Policy Center. Thanks to both of you for joining us as always. We look forward to your next appearances here on Encounter. Well, that's all the time we have today for Encounter. Thanks again to our guests for their terrific insights. Encounter was produced in Washington by VOA Current Affairs. Thanks to our engineer today, Michael Dubinsky. I'm Jim Malone, sitting in for your regular host, Carol Castiel. Join us again next week for another Encounter on the Voice of America.
long. This is VOA West.